So I think we're going to talk about something a little bit different in a way. We're still touching on the my theory of everything, my essay on the natural state of nature that built these podcasts. But one of the things I think I want to talk about is the subtle differences between philosophy, theoretical physics / theoretical cosmology, and our own common sense and observations. Because I've put together, I'm guessing this will probably be pretty far into the podcasts. So by now, if you're still listening, you've got a pretty good idea that there is lots of logic strewn through all of this culmination of different theories, and a lot of common sense. And so I invoke something, thanks to William of Ockham, known as Occam's Razor, which basically says, when presented with multiple options, the simplest explanation is most often correct. Not always correct, but most often correct. So when we examine the very first concept that I feel allows us to use logic to deduce and extrapolate and interpolate the remaining conclusions, Occam's Razor would apply to the eternity of time. It does not make sense to have a span of time without a span of time that preceded it. And so we can have relative time. We understand relativity. We understand what relativity means. We just don't quite apply it properly to the physical world. And I'll get into that. I mean, I've already got into that many different ways, but assuming this is the first podcast you ever hear, I'll get into it. Okay? So, what relativity tells us is that all the measurements of time that we've ever taken or even able to contemplate or calculate are relative to our current parent frame of reference and the space-time it occupies. Its perception of time and space, thus passed on to all of its children bodies, which are as a multiple succession within our visible universe, to bring it down to the level of our planet. There is a multiple successive parent frames of reference that we are part of to be included within, not to be included, to multiple parent frames of reference that define our perception of space and time within our planet. And so, if we start, now I'm not saying we use Occam's Razor to define science. What I'm saying is that the scientific principles, scientific methods, they usually like to have something presented that offers falsifiability. So if you start with a premise that the universe is finite, it's pretty much impossible to prove the total universe is finite and not just a relative patch of space-time that is relative to our space-time, our time and our space. So, I think that when people say, okay, so people say, oh, it's not scientific to think about what came before the Big Bang because our space-time started at the Big Bang and it's been created since, so there was nothing before. Okay? Time does not work like that. Okay? Time is relative. Our relative time, our relative space-time, we know what happened after recombination. That's what we can pretty much gauge for almost certain is the chain of events that occurred after recombination. I believe that in order to see those events happening, there was already swirls of hot energy, photonic plasma energy, swirling around with leftover angular momentum from what caused it to become energy in the first place. But again, that I don't know that we'll get to that right now. Again, if you're starting with this podcast, go start from the beginning. This is a series that really makes sense when you start from the beginning. So I'm going to assume from this point forward that if you're listening to this one, you're already up to speed. Okay? In which case, you've already heard me apologize so many times already for running off onto tangents and the background noise of this stupid freaking car. I got two kids in college, and the problem with my car is not the muffler, it's two different sets of catalytic converters that have rotted out. And so it's a significant job to replace the catalytic converters because you can't buy them used, it seems. You can only buy them new, and you can't even find people, that is, legal garages that will, in America that is, replace catalytic converters with used parts. So you're kind of forced to get new parts and whatnot. Regardless, that's why my car is noisy, is because right now I had to choose between, you know, helping my kids deal with college or either getting a new car. I mean, used cars are crazy now. So I must apologize. I don't know how many of these podcasts with the background noise I'm going to keep. I think that depends on how much time I get to really put things together. There may be a first set of podcasts, and then maybe we'll redo it again. You know, once I have the right equipment and right time. Right now, you know, I'm working 60 to 80 hours a week and doing what everybody else that's listening to this podcast, most everybody else is doing, is you're doing the best you can to provide for your family, living paycheck to paycheck, and we are so freaking off topic, it's just silly. But again, I guess I started this one saying I'm not quite sure what we're going to talk about, or it'll be a little different, so here it is, yeah, a little different. But back on tangent, back to topic. So we start with the idea of infinite time. Okay? So now, because there is no potential laws of physics, including general relativity and the Big Bang Theory, that can provide any semblance of proof there was no span of time that preceded the span of time of the direct chain of events that led to our Big Bang, it is equally viable, if not 100% more viable, to say there was time before our relative time. I believe our relative time is just a subsection of time given to us or granted to us by our successive parent frames of reference. And when you accept that likelihood, so many other mysteries fall into place. But, you know, again, if you've got... Never mind, I'm not going to say it again. So, infinite time. If we start with that as a premise, okay, can we prove it? Through Occam's razor and common sense, yes. Because we have no way to disprove there was a span of time before our relative time began. We can't disprove it. And we'll probably never be able to disprove it because there was time before it. Then we have either a infinite time and localized finite space. And any type of finite space. We believe we have a flat universe. But even if we found out our universe was not flat and curved in, that would just mean the space-time we were in was part of a gravity well of a much more massive body. That's how space-time works. In order to create what they called a torus that we would be inside of, there would be something larger nearby. Not larger necessarily, more massive nearby, causing a curvature within our space-time. But there is no mass of bodies close enough to cause a significant warping of our localized space-time outside and above all of the overlapping gravity wells created by everything within our visible cosmic speck of dust. So instead, it is illogical to assume infinite time without including infinite space-time. We already know space and time are somewhat interwoven. Can they be separated? Do they exist alone? Yeah, probably they do. But they are, in fact, interwoven in such a way that space-time interacts together. What warps space warps time in a way. And so we do have a correlation between them, which would say, if there cannot be a span of time without a span of time preceding it, there can be no first second. And if there is no first second, there can be no first meter or last meter, no first light year or last light year. We have an infinite space-time, which entails another of Occam's razors, well, not another of his razors, the same razor, being called again to define mass and energy. Okay? If you have infinite space-time, which is a logical conclusion based on having infinite time or eternal time, which is a logical conclusion to accepting the fact there can never be a span of time without a span of time that preceded it. It is hugely illogical to assume there could ever be infinite space or infinite space-time with only one tiny localized area of mass energy. So the fact we have mass energy within our localized pocket of space-time, if we apply the logic that says, yes, it certainly makes sense. And again, let me rephrase or restate. Physics is not required to make sense. Common sense is not needed to define reality, because reality is not required to match what common sense dictates. That said, there is still an amount of common sense you can apply to our observations using critical analysis and critical thought to make the most logical deductions. In doing so, we offer the potential to provide greater falsifiability than to start with some assumption of anything finite that we can't prove is finite and base other assumptions off of that. Instead, start your standard models with assumptions of infinite time and infinite space, and build from there and analyze those segments of our current paradigms that are lacking. Where there are mysteries or paradoxes, there is an incomplete application of reality against the observations of reality against the laws of physics as we know them. So either our observations are wrong, the laws of physics are wrong, or we don't have a complete understanding. So the most logical answer is that we likely are observing things correctly. We just may not have a big picture. And so when you begin to study or examine that big picture, you then get a greater sense of what might be occurring outside our little cosmic speck of dust. So if we can accept no span of time was the first span of time, no first second, correlates to a conclusion of infinite space-time, which is, in fact, a logical conclusion. Thereby, it becomes another logical conclusion. There must be infinite energy and infinite mass. infinite space-time with bounded, localized, finite mass or energy does not make sense at all. You use logic to say there is likely life somewhere else within our visible universe. Those who don't believe there is likely life elsewhere in our universe are likely not listening to this podcast because they're too naive, short-sighted, closed-minded, or ignorant to accept the reality of a number of planets with life that exceeds trillions. There could very easily be trillions, or at least over a trillion, habitable planets, not necessarily with sentient life, but with some form of life. Whether or not it's life as we know it, following the chemistry and biology that dictates our carbon-based life forms, it may or may not be carbon-based. It doesn't matter. There is life everywhere. And I guarantee that before my great-grandchildren have kids, it will be proven there existed life elsewhere in this solar system on no less than seven bodies. That's my prediction. There's hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of separate things we could be looking for life on within our heliosphere. I say the minimum number that will show signs of existing life or previous life is seven. Don't ask me for the formula or the math, because it's seven by the time my grandkids are ready for kids. Okay? There are probably more than those seven. I'm just guessing how many we're going to find with fossilized life or evidence of life in our own heliosphere, because life spawns everywhere. Life will try to grab a foothold wherever it could, wherever it can. So, I got off topic again. What were we talking about? Okay, so we have infinite space, infinite time, infinite mass, infinite energy. That is, again, relying on Occam's razor, the most logical explanation for what exists outside our visible cosmic speck of dust. Now, infinity may be hard to grasp for many. And there's tons of people, good scientists, that by all accounts follow the scientific method and are smart people, that refuse to accept the likelihood of an infinite space-time without some proof. Well, you cannot prove the universe is finite, but I've provided multiple ways to prove the universe is infinite. Some may take time. Some we may never find, but I've offered actual experiments or observations that would be able to deduce or conclude an infinite multiverse. And so, I offer falsifiability, something that the current paradigms do not. So if we have infinite space and infinite time, infinite mass and infinite energy, then everything we can see within our cosmic speck of dust, even though it is expanding and moving away from each other, is still going to exist as a localized pocket of mass energy with a succession of parent frames of reference dictated by celestial bodies playing follow the leader. The most massive bodies drag their children along. Those massive bodies, along with their siblings, share a parent frame of reference. That parent frame of reference, along with its siblings playing follow the leader, share a parent frame of reference. And that parent frame of reference, along with its siblings playing follow the leader, and the most massive body or bodies causing the gravitational warping of space and time, causing geodesics to form at those scale factors. Gravity is scale independent, as is electromagnetism. Scale invariant, scale independent. They exist at scales that would mean our visible universe must be within a larger parent frame of reference, a larger Minkowski 40 spacetime, where our visible universe itself, the aggregate mass, density, whatever you want to call it, is causing a warping of space-time around our visible universe in that parent frame of reference. That means that our siblings, most of which were likely all created at the same time as our visible universe, within a couple hundred million years, give or take, would have siblings and potentially parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, frames of reference of multiple successive parents, all created during the mass collisions of two intersecting pockets of space-time that created our visible universe 13.721 billion years ago. I'm sorry. That was just a silly number. It was actually 13.85 something, whatever, give or take. Potentially less than the 380,000 years that it took to cool, because we didn't start with the temperatures that we think we do. We likely started with much lower temperatures. I'm sorry. Yes, much lower temperatures. You know, hundreds of trillions, quadrillions of Kelvin, not 10 to the 35 Kelvin. So if we then allow for the likelihood and the logical assumption, conclusion, deduction, whatever you want to call it, that there was something before the chain of events that created our visible universe, then what we likely have was, again, this passing through each other, because the two pockets that passed each through each other went on their merry way. They each lost some piece of mass density, and that mass density is either, it's its own area, or it is gravitationally bound to one of the two pockets that collided. And our siblings and that parent frame of reference and that parent frame of reference siblings all moving in elliptical orbits around a more massive, dense body are all in succession. And at some point, there will be a shared frame of reference between our visible cosmic speck of dust and some parent frame of reference that is, in fact, a sibling to one or the other or both of the pockets that intersected to create us. Because as you continually go up higher and higher in parent frames of reference, you will eventually meet shared frames of reference between the two bodies that collided, and somewhere in there, our pocket. Now, they may not share any frame of reference together. Those two pockets could have moved off far again, and it could be something that our parent frame of reference, many, many higher levels removed, is then part of something. We don't know how far. We'll never even be able to see any of our siblings, let alone our parents' siblings. The type of society that evolves to that level, I don't think we possess as a species the ability to overcome our obstacles. I sure hope we can. I do believe we possess the ability to overcome it. I just think the obstacles in our way are hindered by the people in power that want to stay in power. If instead we began making global decisions on behalf of the globe and started thinking globally about how every one of us is probably going to return to this planet in our next lifetime or subsequent lifetimes, and you get the roll of the dice as to what you're going to grow up in. And so if the majority of this planet is living below a poverty level without clean water or good medicine or food, fresh food, that's the life you get to look forward to when you die. Or you can go out of your way to unite in voice and unite in action, and let's start changing this world for the better, so that when we come back to it on our next journeys, we have a better chance of having a minimum level of existence that offers us clean water, fresh food, good medicine, and the chance to actually succeed instead of a entire life spent of suffering. And all the people, it's not just no longer, it used to be, There was that level, and there's a level above it of poverty in industrialized nations, per se, where they also had lack of water, food, or medical attention. And there is no reason we cannot accommodate every, not only the human species, but so many other species. And again, this is another podcast. We've already gone through all this, so I don't know why I refresh it. But either way, I got to run. So I think I've said most of what I think I wanted to say. Start with a premise of infinite eternal time, no first second. Build from there, and the conclusions we acquire are a infinite space time, infinite mass, infinite energy, time existing prior to our Big Bang, and a nature to space-time that is a nested succession of parent frames of reference. Whatever our visible universe is must be within some parent frame of reference. It is moving. It is rotating and revolving. It either has satellites, it is a satellite, or both. Likely both. And accepting that visualization of an infinite universe of these nested pockets, it explains how time works, it explains how space works, it explains dark energy, dark matter, quantum weirdness, so many things all begin to fall into place. First life on this planet. So that is why I feel that although I would never want to use Occam's razor as hard proof, I never want to say, oh, this is proven because Occam's razor says that it's the most logical. But when you have so many different observations that our current paradigm is lacking in, that all makes sense within the fabric of a single theory, then to me, in my humble opinion, I'm not necessarily saying I'm right. I believe it makes sense to start our standard models with the premise of infinite space-time and build from there. That is, if anything, my goal here is to see physicists and chemists and biologists around the world agree that it does make sense to start all of our standard models with that premise of infinite time and infinite space and build from there. And then see what those implications would bring us and how do we test for them. Because now that we offer falsifiability, all of the different paradigms of science, not just physics or cosmology, could offer ways to test or see some of these things happening. And I've offered experiments. You know how, like, you know, throwing carbon at absolute zero in water and leaving it there and seeing if it forms life quicker. Plus so many other things. But again, I don't want to get into that. So I got to run. Have a good night, everybody, or good morning, or good afternoon, whatever time it is. And, I hope everybody's doing well. I hope you enjoy these podcasts. I hope I'm enlightening you or making you think and questioning what we see around us, because I think it's important to never become so accepting of any answer that you can't question it and confirm its validity and truth. And so that's my goal here, is I think to try to get as many people to start thinking creatively with open minds as to the logical conclusions we would deduce from infinite time. Because I believe when you do that, so many things fall into place. Okay. Live long and prosper. May the force be with you. 42.